You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome. Oh my goodness. Another week has gone by, and here we are, revolutionaries. You've reached the Rational Revolution. I am your host, Mark Becker. Thank you so much for joining us. Hey, did you know that you can text the show? I didn't know that. I mean, I did. I didn't know how we could do it, but I do now. And what you do is you download the free Civic Media app. And you select your station, whichever station. We got stations all over the state. And then you can text into the show from the app. And later on in the show, I'm going to ask for some audience participation. So as you're listening, download that app and stay tuned for that whole thing. So I, if you missed last week's episode, that was awesome. We had some wonderful conversations. We talked to, oh goodness, Joe Walsh, and then we talked to the campaign manager for Harris campaign, and it was really awesome to be able to speak with both of them. So if you want to catch that episode and you didn't, when you download the free Civic Media app, you can listen to all the episodes there too, just like this one with our dear friend, returning guest, and fellow revolutionary, Mr. Carlton Huffman. How are you?
Doing well. We're at that time of the season where my mood is completely tied to the fortunes of the Georgia Bulldogs. So we'll see how the Saturday evening's clash with the Alabama Crimson Tide goes. But right now, I got to give you a credit. Your Tennessee Volunteers are looking pretty good this year. So we might be seeing each other not just in the regular season, but in the college football playoffs.
I know. And I think, you know, we have our common enemy in the Alabama Crimson Tide. I can't stand them. And so, you know, I do hope they lose in glorious fashion. Tennessee doesn't play this week. But yeah, no, that's cool. My son and I, we do enjoy watching those Volunteers play football. So yeah, how's Georgia's doing good?
Well, I mean, we looked pretty mortal going up against Kentucky.
I saw that.
It's like Georgia football always likes to have at least one heart attack game of the year. I mean, we have not lost a regular season game in three seasons. But
jeez.
They came within 1 point of doing so against Kentucky, but they had a bye week last week. So we'll see if they've got the kinks out of the system, and hopefully they roll through Tuscaloosa tonight. I'm not even going to let the fact that the convicted felon and current Republican nominee Donald Trump is going to be at the game.
Oh, God, is he really?
He likes to show up to these things, even though it brings makes 90,000 people have to go through metal detectors, bag
cases,
and everything else, all so that he can get his photo op.
Right, and he probably only stays for like a quarter and a half. You know, that's interesting.
If that.
Yeah, I didn't realize that that he was going to be at the game. That's interesting.
Yeah, well, when you consider the fact that, I mean, when we last spoke, Joe Biden was still the nominee and Georgia was looking to be increasingly off the map for the Democrats. But now with the switch up and Kamala being in the driver's seat, Georgia is back in play. And so, of course, Donald Trump is going to try and grab every vote that he can through all the attention that he can get. And she's going to try and do the same. So. And now I can sit here and say North Carolina, too, where I'm sitting at, we are once again a battleground state, and it's anybody's ball game.
Yeah, it's really remarkable how things have changed in the last, since we last spoke. And, you know, where we are, the state of the national race, I did like the 538 forecast. And what the 538, for those of you who don't know, is like a prognosticator's prognostication machine. And they have all sorts of different scenarios and all of that. And so what they do is they do like the 538 forecast. And they do 100 scenarios. And I just did it this morning. And in those 100 scenarios, Harris wins 56 times and Trump wins 43. And the map itself has shifted. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, at the back whenever Joe Biden was still the nominee, it was looking increasingly like, due to his flagging numbers with young people and definitely minority voters, particularly black voters, that the Sun Belt, meaning North Carolina, Georgia, Arizona, and maybe Nevada, were off the map for him, and that they were looking increasingly like that Trump was going to carry those states. And so that left basically one path for Joe Biden to retain the presidency, and that was to sweep the blue wall, which is Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, and to pick up the one electoral vote from Nebraska, which we recently saw the Republicans attempted to change the rules very late in the game to take that one vote from Nebraska off the table. But that was Joe Biden's one path to 270. And after the debate in Atlanta back in June, it increasingly looked like not even that was going to happen. But once Kamala Harris took the helm, and she has performed way above the expectations that I myself had and like so many national pundits had of her. She has made this a race, and now North Carolina, Georgia, Arizona, and Nevada are very much in play. And we can see with the spending of the Trump campaign that they see the danger too. And you see it where both him and Vance are spending their time. And it basically comes down to either one of those Sun Belt states and the state of Pennsylvania. If Kamala wins Pennsylvania, it's game over. If Trump wins Pennsylvania, it's going to be a rough ride for American democracy.
Well, and I was playing around on some of those, was it the electoral map, simulators or whatever. And I noticed that I don't think Kamala Harris really even needs to win Arizona. I mean, if she retains the blue wall, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan, it's game over, regardless of Georgia, North Carolina, whatever, it's done. That's game, set, match.
It absolutely is, but it also just is a testament to the state of the change race, and it also just to the state of the electorate, that most everybody, I think, in this country at the very beginning of the cycle, we could look at the two of them, those of us on the pro-democracy side could look at Joe Biden and say, you saved American democracy in 2020. You have been a good and capable president, but to finish your term at 86 is something that we could all look at that and say, that is a questionable bet. We will definitely vote for that over Trump, but for so many people in the country, they had questions, which I believe were legitimate, about his capability of finishing out the rest of this term and finishing a full second term. But now you see people are looking at this race through an entirely different lens. And here we are just less than 6 weeks out. We are right here where early voting is already beginning in certain states. Absentee ballots are going out. And you can see that the Democrats have regained an advantage, which Trump had started after his conviction to close the money gap. But then this last reporting quarter, Kamala outraised him 4-1, which is astounding considering how much Trump was able to raise, but also the fact that Trump is spending more money than he is bringing in. And they do not have an established ground game within the framework of the RNC and the Republican Party of Wisconsin and all the other battleground Republican state parties. It is probably one of the weirdest structures I've seen in terms of how the Republicans are trying to get out their vote, basically using super PACs and third-party groups. But here we are with Kamala at a better than even chance of pulling this thing off. And I just would encourage all of your listeners who are pro-democracy revolutionaries, do not take this for granted. It looks decent right now, but it can still shift with all that we've seen change since this last June.
Well, and, I spoke with last week with Garen Randolph, who is Kamala Harris's Wisconsin campaign manager, and talked about the PTSD that, I remember what 2016 was like. I mean, you remember that very well, too. And it was Hillary Clinton was up big, big, big in all of these states, to the point where Hillary almost, like, all but pulled out of Wisconsin because she was so far ahead in all of the polls. And then we all know what happened in Philadelphia, and that glass ceiling was not shattered at all. The Wisconsin flipped, and all these states that were looking like this was going to be this coronation, this huge moment for our country, and it didn't happen. And so I asked Garen, how do we assure that that doesn't happen again?
I mean, basically it is donate to the Democrat Party of Wisconsin, the Kamala campaign, donate to Tammy Baldwin and all the congressional candidates. Make sure that if you've got a chance to make some phone calls, send some text messages, go out and knock some doors on the rest of these remaining 5 weekends of the election. Do not let off the gas right here, because the Trump team, they have a weird structure right now. They have a lot of structural disadvantages compared to where Kamala is. But the simple fact remains that there is at least 46% to 47% of this country that are locked in with Trump, whether they love and adore him or just simply hate the vision that they think that the Democrats are putting forward to this country. It is basically, you got a few dollars, send them to all those various campaigns. You've got some time, just get up and go. I think it was Dr. King said it best, if you can't run, walk. If you can't walk, crawl. But by whatever means, you have the capability of doing something. Let's do it now while it counts between now and the polls closing on November 5th.
You ever think you would have said that, like what you just said?
If you had told me in 2016 that I would have ever considered voting for a national Democrat, I would have told you you're crazy. If you had told me that I want the Democrats to maintain control of the United States Senate and potentially flip the House, I would have told you you're crazy. But we look and see where the Republican Party has gone. We saw just this last week that Clay Higgins, who was a congressman from Louisiana, basically tell the Haitian residents in Springfield, Ohio, to his words, get the hell out of this country before January the 20th.
Yeah.
I mean, an openly racist statement to people who are here in this country legally.
Right.
That is what the Republican Party has become, and that is entirely because they decided to hitch their wagon to Donald Trump, thinking that they could control him, and instead they became just like him.
Yeah, it really is something that's how the mighty have fallen, and it's really a sad state of affairs when you look at where the party is nationally, where it was. You know, it's the party of Reagan and Lincoln and Bush and McCain, and here we are, you know, telling legal migrants here to get the hell out. Racially charged statements, bigotry, all this stuff. It's just something that is disgusting, and it's really a shame. But we're going to talk about Congress and the balance of power here in the next segment. We are talking with dear friend of the show, Carlton Huffman. We'll see you right back shortly. This is Boston. I love it. If you don't know, well, welcome to the Rational Revolution. Welcome back here. I'm Mark Becker, your host. In our house, we are huge Boston Red Sox fans. Not the Patriots, because, you know, screw those guys. But we love the Red Sox because my aunt and uncle used to live out there, and I became a fan of them when I was little. And off the air, Carlton and I were talking baseball, and one of the things that we're on the precipice of history here. So if you don't know, the Chicago White Sox are one game away from being the worst team in modern baseball history, but they're riding a 3-game winning streak. Like, what in God's name? So we're waiting on bated breath for history to happen down in the old Chicago South Side. So, but anyway, we've got Carlton here. Hi, Carlton. How are you?
Basically feeling like the Atlanta Braves right now. We're white-knuckling it until Monday to find out whether we actually have a shot in the playoffs or not, just like the country is pretty much white knuckling it until November 5th or whenever we get a winner's tournament.
Yes, that's exactly, and that's a good segue to talk about Congress and the balance of power. How does that look?
If you're looking at the United States Senate and you are hoping that the Democrats retain their majority, it is looking increasingly precarious, basically because we went into this cycle, the Democrats had 51 seats and 49 for the Republicans, and the map was decidedly one that the Republicans were set to overperform in a presidential year. The most endangered Senate seat has got to be John Tester out there in Montana. He is looking increasingly like it's not going to happen for him in terms of making that race. I mean, he has defied history in both 2012 and 2018 when the Republicans thinking they were going to knock him off. But it looks like maybe the third time is going to be the charm. And the Joe Manchin seat, whether you wanted to count him as a Democrat or not, in West Virginia, is all but assured to go to the Republicans. And just those two seats right there, that would put the Republicans in the majority regardless of the result of the presidential race. Though today, we saw an announcement from the Democrat Senate Committee in Washington that they are looking to put money into two states that we never thought would be the ones the Democrats would think about throwing money into because they're so expensive and because they were seen as out of reach. But they are looking to go into Florida against Rick Scott and then also to go into Texas against, of all people, Ted Cruz.
Is that the Ted Cruz move is wild. Is that more of like trolling Ted Cruz than it is?
It is based on like recent polling in both Florida and Texas have reflected the fact that despite the both states' relative Republican tilt, that if you are looking for two more unlikable people in the United States Senate, you would be hard-pressed to find two people more unlikable than Ted Cruz and Rick Scott. Yeah. Ted is one that ever since he realized he was not going to be president, after knuckling under to Trump, he came within 2 points of being upset 6 years ago. Beto O'Rourke.
Yeah, yeah.
But we've got a Democrat down there who's a former NFL player, Colin Allred, who has both a good biography and a good record as a bipartisan, solutions-oriented member of Congress. He has kept the race within single digits of Ted Cruz. And the fact is that Texas is an expensive state. It might seem like fool's gold to go into both there and Florida. But at this point, the Democrats, if they've got money and they've got two very unpopular Republican incumbents, that's the way to go. And I think that everybody looking at the Rust Belt states, including Wisconsin, they believe that the top of the ticket race will largely be tied to what happens in those Senate races.
Sure.
I think Tammy Baldwin is doing a very good job against Eric Covey. She is set to outperform top of the ticket. And that is looking to be the same scenario with Bob Casey in Pennsylvania. So
yeah.
If Kamala Harris can win both Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, the Democrats are likely to keep those Senate seats. And I think that that's imperative on them just because of the way that the Senate map is tilted. If they want to have a shot at either retaining or taking back the Senate in 2026, should they lose it this time, they have to limit their losses. But on the plus side for Democrats, you're looking at increasingly the odds are that they are going to retake the House of Representatives.
Really?
So if you're looking, yes, that basically in 2022, the Republicans overperformed in suburban New York City and in suburban LA. And so those seats in a presidential year, those are hard pressed for Republicans to retain. So with a 5-seat majority, the Republicans can only afford to lose 4 seats. And we're also seeing, too, some other seats are coming online, including in Wisconsin. So if any of your listeners in western Wisconsin or even people that just want to see a good Democrat take on a questionable at best Republican, Rebecca Cook over there in Wisconsin 3, Democrats are increasingly bullish on her chances, and some of the internal polling has shown that to be a single-digit race with a chance for an upset and Rebecca Cook knocking off Derek Van Orten.
That would be seismic, I would think.
To have a Democrat in Western Wisconsin be able to keep it competitive, that helps at the presidential level. It's a reflection upon, you've got Tim Walz, next door neighbor. Everybody over those media markets knows who he is.
Yep.
That has definitely helped Democrats' chances in a region of the state where typically the Republicans of the Trump era have overperformed. So we're looking at some other seats that are kind of in the Sun Belt, which Democrats in North Carolina's first district, they're looking to knock off an incumbent Democrat. If he's able to retain his seat, then he should be in good shape. But the North Carolina, as I can testify firsthand from being here and living here, the Republicans were able to take control of the state Supreme Court. And we saw in Wisconsin how advantageous that was for the Democrats to take control of the Supreme Court. In North Carolina, the pro-democracy side lost control of the Supreme Court, and the Republicans were able to push a very gerrymandered map that will net them at least 3 congressional seats in North Carolina alone, which is why the Democrats are really pushing hard in both New York, California, and trying to get those other seats like the Van Orden seat in Wisconsin to be in play.
Yeah, so it's it's interesting. You know, obviously you'd love to have all 3 branches, but it's like which one would you which one would you want, the House or the Senate? Which one is the one that makes the most sense to keep or retain? But we're going to talk a little more about this on the other side of the break here. We've got a good friend of the show, former Republican strategist Carlton Huffman here on the Rational Revolution.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. What's up, revolutionaries? I've been using that. That's a good shoe. You know what I mean? We've got Carlton Huffman, dear friend of the show here. We're talking about balance of power and all this other kind of stuff. But I want to pivot a little bit, and not to doom and gloom everything, but like, let's walk down this path. All right, it's going to be January 6th again. And when the vote is certified, how poetic, you know. Let's say Kamala Harris wins this thing. What stunts can the GOP try to pull?
Well, there are a number of scenarios that we can look at based upon what happened in 2020, but also what they are currently doing and trying to tee up. And I can sit here and say, the good news is that Donald Trump is not in the Oval Office with the powers of the presidency and the executive branch to back up a lot of his shenanigans. The bad news is that Republicans at a lot of these state-level positions have definitely tried to mess around with the rules. But basically, it comes down to this. So just let's picture election night. If Kamala Harris were to either be in the lead, looking like she's going to win, or is actually proclaimed the winner by the networks. In Georgia alone, you have a board of elections that is made up of a majority of pro-MAGA Republicans, not even regular Republicans, but outright pro-MAGA Republicans. They have changed the rules that basically have demanded all 157 counties in Georgia have to count their ballots by hand, which that is, Georgia being one of the top 10 most populated states in the country, that is going to delay any certification or even just knowing what the results are going to be for days, if not up to a few weeks.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
So, and they also put in the rules where the county boards cannot certify the election if there are reasonable challenges to those results. So basically, they are trying to throw in to question, number one, what the results are even going to be, but also to delay as long as possible any chance that we would have any certainty over Georgia. In North Carolina, they changed the rules to a similar standard when it comes to the absentee ballots as Wisconsin. And what I mean by that is that Wisconsin law requires until Election Day people have, the election officials have to wait to be able to process and then count those ballots.
Right.
Before that, North Carolina had a system where they would be processed a lot faster. So once again, it is taking a state and slowing down the process by which the results can be both counted and then certified. And in Michigan is probably the most chaotic of setups. And we saw this in 2020 where you had certain, it was required that the counties have to certify the election results. You had Republicans who were throwing a monkey wrench into the system, basically refusing to certify the results, even though Michigan was won decisively by Joe Biden in 2020. So every contribution by the MAGA Republicans is to do two things: slow it down and basically throw the certification process into chaos. So even if we have an established vote count with Kamala Harris in the lead, they're trying to set the tone for a weeks-long, two-month-long period of challenges to the results.
Which is hilarious, because one of the things that the Republicans, you know, pissed and moaned about, I think I can say that on the radio, was the fact that, you know, we have these late night ballot dumps. And so now there is nothing out of the ordinary about these quote late night ballot dumps. But now what they've done is they've made them likely across the entire country.
It absolutely is. I mean, and it is basically trying to sow confusion. They put a break on the legitimate actors, the legitimate media, and the legitimate election actors who are just trying to get to a result and tell the public what has happened. They're trying to basically force a system where nobody can know anything or nobody has any clear idea of what's going on. And even when it was pretty well known as we headed into the wee hours of the morning in election 2020, we saw that Biden was beginning to take the lead in a lot of these battleground states, including Wisconsin. But because they had, the Trump folks had several hours to sow the doubts about these potential ballot drops, they were able to twist a lie that has taken hold of the entire Republican Party that we're still dealing with 4 years later, where a significant portion, if not a majority of Republicans, think that the 2020 election was stolen. And they are trying to do that at scale this time.
Yeah, he could lose by 12 million votes. He's not going to concede. What are they going to try to do? So we know what the strategy is on election night. It's to run out the clock, to not have a winner that night, you know, and try to sow as much confusion as possible. Between Election Day and January 6th, when the, or on January 6th itself here, 2025, what are they going to try to do with the process there?
Well, you have, thankfully, they did build in a few additional protections, which formalize the vice president's role in certifying the election. It is kind of hilarious to me that regardless of what happens, Kamala Harris is going to be the one counting the votes in terms of the, she's going to be the presiding officer over the Senate, counting those electoral votes as they come in. But just as Mike Pence understood it implicitly, it is now explicit in law that the vice president's job is to just sit there, count the votes, and announce them. But what you could see in terms of trying to delay the certification in a lot of these states is to do what they tried to do last time, is to have one or two states thrown into question and deny Kamala Harris the 270 electoral votes in the Electoral College, and then it would be thrown into the House of Representatives. And this is where it gets very dicey, because
right,
even though whether the Democrats took the majority or not, the House of Representatives votes by state, not by sheer number of members, but votes by state, meaning that the congressional delegations in those states would be in charge of delivering those states to one or the other. And the way things are structured around the country right now, if they all voted in a partisan manner, that would deliver the presidency to Donald Trump if it got to that point.
Is it legal? They could do that?
It's as legal as a handshake.
Oh,
and that is the one thing that they realize they cannot win the popular vote, as the Republican Party has structured itself right now. They have basically written off entire parts of the country. They don't care about urban areas. They right. count those people as illegitimate. They right. do not care about suburban voters who have questions about abortion, questions about the increasingly racist language when it comes to immigration. Right. They only care about getting enough of their voters in the solid MAGA areas out to the polls, win enough of the Electoral College, and failing the Electoral College, throw a monkey wrench into that and get it to the floor of the House of Representatives, where the majority of states in this country, by their congressional delegation, are more Republican, whether that is a reflection of the overall majority or not. And by process, that would deliver the presidency to Donald Trump.
And so, as we talked to Carlton Huffman, former Republican strategist and a dear friend of the show, remind me again, how would they do that? How would they force this to the House of Representatives?
If, say, the Georgia votes were in so much question, much like Florida in 2000, it comes down to a close vote where the Board of Elections does not want to certify whether there's enough electoral ballot questions in Michigan to where they're not going to certify, or if it's another state like Arizona. Fortunately, Arizona seems a little bit more on the safe side since we have a Democrat governor and a Secretary of State there that would probably be able to put the brakes on any hijinks that they would pull out there. But in places like Georgia and places like Michigan, you don't need a governor or a Secretary of State. All you need is enough county boards to refuse to certify the votes of the election. And then that would probably bring things into a legal battle, which would at that point, in the Republicans' minds, hopefully deny those states' ability to have their electoral votes counted on January 6th and therefore throw it into the House of Representatives.
And it just on a state-by-state basis or the entire thing?
It would be on a state-by-state basis.
Okay. Okay, so it could happen, but the likelihood of it happening is what would you say that would be?
It depends on, if we are basing the scenario on Kamala Harris winning the presidency on Election Day, it would depend on, does she win it by just that blue wall and that Nebraska electoral vote, which would put her at exactly 270 electoral votes, and therefore all they would need is Michigan to drop off? Or does she pick off one of those Sunbelt states? If she picks off more than two Sunbelt states, then I think that the likelihood of this scenario drops to almost zero. But if it comes down to that 270 path just through the blue wall in Nebraska, it could jump to as much as 50%, if not more, at that point.
Wow. Okay. And so, is this something where they would like run out the clock and here we are on inauguration day and no one shows up, you know, because we're still in a battle or?
This has happened before in American history. This happened without like the nefarious scheming of people like Donald Trump, but right. Thomas Jefferson was elected in this manner in 1800. You had in 1876, they did not know who the president was going to be on Inauguration Day because they had three states in the South, including Florida and South Carolina, that were still in dispute. And it only came down to, it was a corrupt bargain that basically delivered the South into the hands of Jim Crow, and the Republicans were able to keep the presidency. But they did not know who the president was going to be, so they made dual invitations out. Is a unlikely scenario, but it is not unprecedented. And it is entirely these rare but not entirely unprecedented scenarios that you have these Trump lawyers and these Federalist Society appointees looking to poke holes wherever they can. As long as Donald Trump wins the presidency, they don't care how they get there.
And what's wild to me is like, you know, instead of trying to improve your message and, you know, speak to voters in a way that, you know, changes their mind and wins them over by process of giving a positive message for your vision for the country. No, we have to find the little legalese that allows us to slither our way back into the Oval Office. It's just wild.
And I think you and me are both like firsthand witnesses to the devolution of the Republican Party.
Oh, yeah.
Because both of us would consider ourselves, we came of age in the 90s, early 2000s. Yep. And so there were rules of decorum. There were rules where we said we might not like the outcome, but we accept it. But around the time, beginning originally with Bill Clinton to a lesser extent, but definitely with Barack Obama, Republicans refused to accept the legitimacy of the fact that there was a majority of the country that saw things differently than them on a select number of issues. And so they thought Obama was an illegitimate president. They think Joe Biden is an illegitimate president. They will do everything they can if she were to win to paint Kamala as an illegitimate president, because they don't think that there is a their worldview is basically set in stone that there is no legitimate way that they can lose an election unless it's by fraud or by criminality. And we saw it firsthand as we were getting into our waning days as very partisan Republicans, that it would not be uncommon for us to hear Obama referred to in a racial epithet or derogatory way, and also have it basically implied there was no way he legitimately won the presidency.
Yeah, there was a guy that I replaced on the Brown County Republican Party board, and it was because he would use the worst racial slur in reference to Barack Obama, and yeah, I mean, that was just seeing that become normal is really awful. So I hope to do this again as we get closer, because I think that would be really beneficial. And these are all, it's always good to hear kind of where things are at, and you have such a good understanding of all of this. So my dear friend Carlton Huffman, thank you so much for your time today. We got to do this again, and good luck to the old dogs this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Go Braves, go Dogs.
Thank you, brother. Good talking with you. All right, we'll be right back here on the show. What's going on, revolutionaries? That is good, yeah. Thank you again so much for listening and sticking with us and all that good stuff. And thank you again to Carlton Huffman. He's such a good guy. You know, I've known him for many, many years. And I remember the first time I met him at the local Republican Party office, and he was this chipper guy with this thick Southern drawl, and I'm like, who in the hell is this dude? You know? And we got to talking, and I realized that chipper Southern, that's who he is. And once you get over that as a, you know, Midwest person that typically minds their own business, you realize what a good friend he is. And so I'm so glad he's a friend of our show. So I hope you enjoyed that. And again, I want to remind you, download that Civic Media app, because you can select your station and then text the show, because I'm going to ask you to do that here in this segment. And this is the musings segment, and this is kind of becoming my favorite, because I just get to, you know, talk about whatever the heck I want. And it's this past week has been kind of difficult for me, you know, and it in the business, we're trying to grow and I'm trying to make all the right decisions. It's just hard, you know, and there's so much uncertainty and so much unease. And, you know, I don't know what to do. There's no playbook for what we're trying to do, but we just try to push forward. And I know that, like, what I'm going through, it's just like first world problems. But something hit me like a ton of bricks, and I watch reels with my kid at night. That's kind of what we do. We hang out and watch reels as we drift off to sleep. My wife loves it. but there was a reel of the dude from Blue's Clues, Steve. And he was like, how you doing? And the responses were like, they were just heavy. And you could kind of see it in his eyes as he would read, you know, it's hard out here, man. And people that are truly struggling, and whether it's first world problems or not, but, you know, the struggling with the prospects of not being able to retire or raising kids while worrying if they're going to come home from school or not, and bullying and trying to balance loving your children with parenting them, and or just trying to deal with the costs of housing going up or food. And, you know, it is hard out here. And this is kind of where I want you to text something, right? And we're going to go over it next week. But I know that so many people are struggling. And I guess, you know, this segment, I do want to tell you that you guys are seen. You know, whether it's me, whether it's other people in your life, like, you're seen, right? And, you know, I know, God knows I don't have all the answers to everything. but I want to encourage everybody not to give up and do what works for you. I want to tell you what works for me. And I saw this once on a reel, and it was this guy. He's like some sort of a psychologist or whatever, you know, one of those. And he was saying that start every day by looking at yourself in the mirror and saying three words to yourself, and you got to mean it, right? And if you can't, and say it 10 times, because by the 10th time, you're going to mean it. And if you don't mean it by the 10th time, then say it 20 times and tell yourself, I love you. Look at yourself in the mirror, say, I love you. Say it 10 times. And if you don't mean it by the 10th, keep going until you mean it. And I do that every day. And it's all, you know, I start and it's like I'm rolling my eyes, but by like time 6 or 7, I can look at myself, take a deep breath and be like, okay, I do love you. Because that's how it starts. And nothing good happens if you don't love yourself. You have to do that, right? And that's been really incredible advice for me as some things have been, you know, a struggle or hard to deal with. And the most important thing for me has been staying close with the people that mean the most to me. You know, I talk about how we watch reels with my kid at night, and my wife rolls her eyes, but it's therapeutic too. And, you know, the biggest thing is in the morning, you know, my kid will crawl in. We were very close. He's 7 and I have other kids, so I'm a terrible father here, but like we have a very close relationship, and he will, they'll come into bed and we'll snuggle, and I'll just sit there and say, you know, if I have nothing, I still have everything because I've got them. Period. And that's huge. So what I want you to do is I want you to text our show. How do we do that? Hey, download the free Civic Media app, select your station, and tell me what works for you. What is working for you? And I'm going to read that for everybody else because, excuse me, it's getting hot in here or something. Because if we can figure out what works for each other, we're all in this together. So tell me what you're struggling with. Tell me how you get through every day. And we can help each other out. That's a big deal because we're all in this together. My friends, my revolutionaries, you are loved and I don't want you to give up either. So text the show, download that app. And we can share some cool ideas together during this musing segment next week. So I really want to hear from you. I want to hear how your life is, what you're going through, and when the going gets tough, how do you, as the tough person, get yourself going? Cool? Keep in touch with us here on the Rational Revolution. Thank you all so much. Again, I'm Mark Becker. We'll see you next week. We got a powerhouse guest. It's going to be cool. Have a good week, everybody. But when you talk about destruction, don't you know that you can count me out? Don't you know it's gonna be all right? The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.